Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, and welcome back to Queer Talk, a queer podcast that brings you a regular dose of positive news stories and fabulous interviews.
Hi!
It's 2022, and we're doing things a little differently here at Queer Talk. Throughout season 3, Spencer and I will be recording specific good news episodes where we'll be joined by a different guest each time to discuss some recent positive LGBTQ+ news articles. Today we've invited our friend, avid listener and supporter of the podcast, Joshua Wells, to join us and to christen season 3.
Welcome, hun. It's so good to finally have you here with us on Queer Talk.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a long time coming. Very excited to be here.
You're like, been waiting 30 episodes.
Mega fan has arrived.
We do appreciate all your support and coming to the live shows as well.
Yeah, thank you. I would definitely recommend everyone attend the live shows if you get an opportunity. They were amazing. You had some amazing guests as well, and I really loved it.
Thanks, babe.
You're welcome.
Well, for those of you who do not know, Josh is a pharmacist and the clinical lead at Lavender Health, an LGBTQ+ sexual health company aiming to reduce inequalities and increase access to sexual healthcare services. But more importantly, Josh is one of our longest and most hardcore fans, having listened to every single episode and, like we just said, attended loads of our live shows. How are you feeling today, Josh?
Yeah, a little bit rough around the edges, I have to be honest. I was catching up with some friends last night. Got a little bit wild, but I'm here. I've got my cup of tea. I'm powering it on. So yeah,
it's all good. Post-Christmas, let's all socialise again because we've been with our families for so long.
Basically, yeah. I was holed up. Actually, I had a really nice Christmas. So I was at my boyfriend's parents' place in Oxfordshire in the middle of the countryside, but very isolated. So now I just thought, make the most of it before New Year's. Catch up with some friends I haven't seen in ages, and we had a good night, maybe just too good a night.
Well, I'm glad you're still able to record with us today.
Yeah, definitely.
And like Spencer said, you've listened to every single episode, so actually,
I have.
We're just going to quiz you right now.
Oh my God.
Imagine.
The stress is real.
Imagine. No, there's no quiz, especially if you're hungover. We'll just trust and believe. I mean, I remember you messaging us after every single one, like, oh my God, today was so good. Oh my God, today was so good. So I'm just going to trust that you weren't lying to us for the last year and a half.
I mean, it's a fairly elaborate plan that I've like concocted. I've brought you into Lavender. I've been to every single show. I'm just pretending. I've not actually listened to any episodes.
The reason I know you've listened is because when you came to the live shows, you were like, oh my God, that person was on the podcast. Oh my God, it's Sheena. And you were so excited to meet Sheena.
Obsessed. Yeah, I'm literally obsessed. And it was like a celebrity meet and greet for me coming to your show, getting to see all the guests. They didn't know me though. That was the kind of scary thing. I just stood there like a stalker.
That's the fun of it all.
Yeah, but you gave me a lovely, lovely Christmas card, which also started some drama. I apologize.
Oh my God, yeah. I'm dead.
You posted really about did. It and people were like, where is mine?
Yeah, I look forward to my Christmas card next year, but I promise not to post about it.
The drama was all directed at Muffscene. It's totally fine. These are like Muffscene's contacts that are like, oh, where's mine? Thankfully, I put all of my besties on the list, regardless of their support. So I got away with it, but Muffscene's in trouble. So today we're all going to discuss our positive news story that we have brought. I'm going to kick it off with a story that is about a sex shop for people surviving with cancer that is proudly super queer. So to break that down, there is an article that I found on Pink News that discusses this sex shop about people sparking conversations that are normally quite scary to have. I think having sex whilst having cancer is probably quite taboo. It's definitely not something I've read or heard about before. And after reading the article, there's actually a lot of fear and anxiety around those kind of things. So around particular practices, if things hurt more or less, if certain things can take place whilst you're undergoing certain treatment. And people with cancer themselves are confused and curious and have all these questions. So co-founder Brian LaBelle, who created the project with June Lin Go, kind of created this platform that is a combination of like media and artwork, as well as a sex shop that sells all of these toys and different devices, and is opening up conversation as well as giving them the solution, giving them the physical thing that gives them pleasure. Really, really exciting overall, and something that is quite inspiring as well to tackle a problem head on and to bring people together, you know, building that community, giving them these toys and also breaking down taboos is as positive as our news story is going to get, I think. So I'm just super, super impressed by this whole thing. Reading through it, they specifically wanted to target marginalized communities. They said, you know, having cancer is shit, but having cancer and being queer or and being black and being disabled, etc., has those extra barriers that you have to overcome. And they really wanted to make sure that these toys and everything were gender neutral and didn't require a man and a woman to use them or a, you know, particular sexual organs to use them. They wanted to make sure that everyone was welcome, but also to make sure that this was about more than just coming at the end of the process. It was about, you know, building that relationship with yourself and regaining intimacy.
Yeah, that's really true. Like, you don't really hear about sex or even pleasure for people with cancer. And I guess it's actually quite an important thing for someone who's undergoing treatment to have a good quality of life. It's not just about treatment. It's quite a difficult thing to go through. But often, like, what gets you through that is actually just, you know, pleasure, love. But, like, it is important to kind of focus on stuff like that and to have these conversations, because I imagine if you're going through treatment, you may not even know if you're allowed to have certain types of sex. And sex often seems like you're just talking about fertility all the time in the kind of medical context. But there's a lot more to that, and it's great to see that people are putting a focus on this and also providing resources.
Yeah, definitely. I think also it's great to redefine cancer. You know, unfortunately, we have this tendency to think of people living with cancer as these ill, disabled, in a sense, individuals who are limited in their functionality in terms of their health by cancer or their diagnosis. And by starting these conversations, allowing people to have open discussions about sex and pleasure, and like you said, Martine, it's actually beyond just, well, I think it just goes beyond, like you said, just wanting to come at the end of it. Sex is more than just penetrative sex as well. It's having the opportunity to communicate with yourself, communicate with others, think about your identity. You know, that might even change during cancer treatment. So yeah, super exciting. Whereabouts is this based, Spencer?
I think it's based in London, but because they have the online shop, it's pretty available to everyone, which is always a good thing. I think, like you said, they said, like, it's really difficult to have these conversations because normally around people with cancer, you're like, you see inspiring, like, walks up mountains or, like, yeah, a kid achieving their wish of, like, going to Disneyland or something. You don't see, like, oh, this person gained sexual pleasure and freedom, because it's harder to stick on a poster. But actually, that's the kind of small private things that people can reach and achieve that can give them that instant satisfaction instead of just something huge. Huge that everyone has to work towards and raise money for and stuff. It's about day-to-day pleasure rather than just, yeah, a one-off experience.
If you're living with cancer, you may not have confidence around it, around intimacy, so to have people you can go to talk to about that to kind of build up that confidence is great.
The article ended with the founders kind of explaining why they felt it needed to be queer owned and queer people that made the project, and they said, as queer people, our pleasure is part of who we are, as well as our shame being part of who we are, as well as our bodies, what we love, what we hate. And I think that really resonated with me because it's true. I think we carry a lot of shame as queer people purely because we have to come out and find ourselves and discover ourselves, etc., time and time again. And I think, not to compare experiences, but I think they're absolutely right in saying this, like, all of that factoring into this experience and this kind of platform is magical. So I'm glad that it's a queer-owned business that are making a difference.
This is a Gay Times article which was highlighting that Tokyo is going to recognise same-sex partnerships in a huge step forward for equality. The city's governor, Yuriko Koki, explained that Tokyo would implement a system that would recognise gay partnerships as equal to marriage after the Tokyo Metropolitan Assembly unanimously agreed that it was time for recognition. And I guess there's been pressure on the Japanese government, the national government, to introduce same-sex recognition, as it's the only G7 nation that doesn't have any form of legal recognition for same-sex marriage, which is quite surprising when you think about it. One of the leading countries in the world not recognising same-sex marriage. But even despite that, 100 local authorities in the country do actually recognise certain rights for gay couples, like, for example, joint names on rental contracts was the example given in the article. And when I read that, I thought, that's wild. Like, the national government doesn't recognise same-sex marriage, but 100 local authorities, and now Tokyo as well, recognises some form of same-sex arrangement. And I don't know much about Japanese like day-to-day culture, but I imagine from what I've seen and read that some of that just comes down to kind of the fact that they may not want to undermine traditional Japanese family values and the family system. So the reforms will come into place in April 2022, but it's still unclear whether it will be legal recognition or not. And there's a lobbying group called Marriage for All Japan, which is kind of highlighting that, yes, it's a step forward, but we really need national legal recognition of same-sex marriage.
Yeah, I think it's about time. And I think I'm really curious to know how the other kind of legislations are and where they're up to, because obviously I think here, being in the UK, same-sex marriage now is such an annoyance in that people think that that's all we wanted to achieve. They're like, oh, you've got same-sex marriage. Like, why are you still whinging? Why are you still protesting? And so whilst this is a huge win in Tokyo, I'm curious to see like how the other legislations are and how behind they might be. But really, really amazing to see that, you know, the 100 local authorities kind of got on with it regardless and kind of put that pressure, because I don't know if it would work the same way here. It's particularly around trans rights.
I don't think the setup is the same in the UK. Like, I don't think the councils in the UK could do the same thing.
It's an impressive kind of force of power.
If the capital city is going to be recognising same-sex marriage, it probably like legal recognition in the whole country is not too far away.
Yeah, I mean, you'd hope so. I was just having a quick look, actually. So from my understanding, it looks like they don't currently have an LGBTQ plus specific equality act in place, unfortunately, in Japan. It's something that was being debated and trying to be pushed for this year. But, you know, I totally recognise your point, Spencer, about marriage almost feeling like the one thing that we've got and, you know, don't need to move forward anymore. But hopefully, you know, we'll see this as an opportunity for improving legislation and equality in Japan now, and hopefully Tokyo can be that focal point and it will spread out to other local authorities. But yeah, from my understanding also, they're quite a conservative culture, so it may not be as quick as you might expect or we might hope.
Talking about it being a conservative culture, in the same article, a survey by the public broadcaster NHK showed that 57% of people in Japan approved gay marriage being legalised. Okay. So that's good. At least the majority are kind of on board. And I don't know if you remember Queer Eye Japan, where they had Can.
Yes, yeah.
And he was saying that when he's in Canada, he feels way more himself. I just remember that episode because it's kind of shows you the distinction between like living in the Western world and living in Japan. Spencer's like, never watched Queer Eye.
Yeah, I literally haven't, you know. I hate following the crowds. And also, I watched one episode and I was like, what is this? Why are these five people helping people? I mean, obviously it's good to help people, but I don't know. I didn't get it.
I'll send you a list of the good episodes to watch. So you don't have to watch them all. Like, it's come back. Season's back.
Some of them are much more heartwarming than others, I find. But okay. Yeah, but definitely recommend watching. It's really good.
Because I felt this way about Drag Race. Like, I started on season 6 of Drag Race and then I was like, oh, this is actually good. This was years ago, but I was still years behind everyone else. Like, I think season 10 or 11 was out when I started watching season 6 for the first time. So it was just, yeah, I think I just need like people to do the work for me and tell me what's good and what's not. Maybe we should do that with Queer Talk. Although I'd like to think that all of the episodes are good.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Joshua Wells, the floor is yours.
Thanks so much. So there's not a specific article I'll be talking about per se, because I'm sure people have seen it plastered everywhere, hopefully. But one thing that we could potentially link is to the FDA.gov website. And this is their most recent news release, which was on December 20th, 2021. And that was with the fantastic news that the first injectable treatment for HIV PrEP or pre-exposure prevention has been approved. And this is super, super exciting, just because it's potentially going to change the way that we provide PrEP, essentially, for people. A couple of things to know. So we currently have PrEP, which is a combination of two medicines and a pill. And the new medicine is called Apretude, or Cabotegravir, which is an antiretroviral medicine. And it's going to be what we call an extended released injectable suspension. So these types of injections we can give into muscles, so usually into the gluteus, so your backside or your leg. And these are long lasting injections, which basically prevent you having to come in and take medicines all the time. And with the new PrEP, as we call it, Apretude, this will be lasting for 2 months. So that's completely going to change the way that people access PrEP and are covered in terms of HIV prevention. Because currently people who take PrEP, obviously there's a few different ways to take PrEP, but you can take it daily or you can take it as event-based. So around particular times that you're going to be having sex. Whereas for this, obviously, once you've had your injection, you're covered. Really great news to see that there's going to be this change in approval. Obviously the FDA is for the US, so it doesn't necessarily mean that it's approved here yet, but generally stuff follows suit fairly quickly. And yeah, I thought that's super, super exciting. And what was really nice to see is that actually the two clinical trials that they did, one was with transgender and cisgender men who have sex with men, and the other one was with cisgendered females or women. So we've actually got quite a diverse group to look at from the clinical trial data, which generally doesn't happen for a lot of research, and that's been sort of a historical issue. So it's also kind of encouraging to see that we're having more diversity even within our sort of clinical trials, and that we've got a wider breadth of people being involved from the community to actually test these medicines, you know, the sorts of people that will probably be accessing PrEP services. So yeah, super, super exciting. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see.
That is very exciting as a PrEP user. And you're absolutely right, like when they do trials, they need to do it on like a very diverse group of people, because there's sometimes no point of just trialing, say, for example, white men, because then you don't know if that drug is effective on brown men or women.
Exactly.
As we have a science person here, I just want to know, how do you take a drug, like an injection, and it still be effective for 2 months? Like, does it not just like slowly disappear in its how effective it is over the 2 months?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question. So this is why these are the specifically formulated medicines that we inject as long-lasting. Essentially, they come in sort of a fatty suspension, and then they get released very slowly into the bloodstream and into the body. So that's why we inject it into, it's not intravenous, it's intramuscular. So it kind of sits within that component in the body and then will slowly just be released. And you get a nice steady state, is what we like to call it. So a steady state of the drug just means that it sort of stays at a constant level.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, over that 2 month period, that's when it will release.
So smart.
So smart.
So smart.
But essentially, the first injection you'll have to have. You have to have two injections within the first 2 months.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's every 2 months. So yeah, it could completely change, I think, the way that people, actually people who don't actually access PrEP now, I think may be more encouraged to have an injection, because one of the issues with PrEP or antiretroviral medicine specifically is resistance and adherence. So if you are HIV positive or living with HIV and, you know, don't take your medicines regularly or have long gaps, unfortunately you can develop resistance, which means the drugs become ineffective. And with PrEP, obviously if you don't take it according to how we suggest it should be taken, that can lead to lack of protection. Whereas with this, obviously having something long lasting just avoids those issues with adherence or missing doses, which could be quite critical, especially with the government's plan, you know, to end new HIV diagnosis by 2030 in the UK. Yeah. This could be a huge step forward in supporting the way that we deliver HIV and PrEP care, basically.
That's fantastic.
You know, some people will be somewhat put off, but I think maybe actually now with the big vaccination efforts with COVID, people have become more familiar with injections. So
that's very true.
Hopefully that would help to overcome some sort of hesitancy around injections. Yeah. Obviously, not everyone can use this medicine. And we'll get more information about sort of what we call the product characteristics and what the marketing authorization will be for people in terms of who can use it, how they can use it.
You've done your research, Joshua. I'm impressed.
Well, you have to come prepared, don't you? I don't want to get in trouble.
I can't relate. I did not come prepared, but I'm good for you. With the rollout of this, do you think it will help reduce transmissions of HIV quicker than 2030?
I mean, that's a very difficult question to answer. I guess one component of it is that, you know, when would the UK get the marketing authorization to use the medicine? So it's very hard to say how quickly we'll be able to start using the medicine here. I would hope that it does, because ultimately, if you've got a long-lasting medicine which avoids the need for regular follow-ups, it's generally going to be more tolerable or acceptable to groups of patients, which hopefully means that we have a wider base of people using this type of PrEP, as well as people who also will continue to use oral PrEP.
As PrEP is mostly free across the UK, do you think that this injection will also be free, or do you think there'll be potential differences?
So particularly when medicines are first released, they are sort of branded under whatever their authorization is, and they can be quite expensive. And then once that sort of that period finishes, it can vary, but you start to develop generic medicines which are a lot cheaper. So currently PrEP that we use in the UK is a generic version. So you might have heard of Truvada, but we just use generic PrEP, which is much cheaper, and that's probably why the NHS is providing it for free. I would hope that it would be free, because generally it would be something that would be provided by sort of NHS England, so they would absorb the cost and provide that. But you know, there's one thing if the medicine is effective, but you have to consider, is it cost effective? So when they do come to releasing PrEP and then looking at the injections, if it's not deemed to be as cost effective as oral PrEP, it could affect the way that service is delivered. So we'll need some more data, essentially, which is obviously the answer to anything science is, more data. But it'll be really interesting to see over the sort of next months and years how well the medicine is accepted and what that looks like in terms of sort of HIV prevention and what the costs come out like.
Always good to have more options for treatment and prevention than less, and we're trying to get to zero by 2023, did you say?
2030. Yeah, so 2030 is the aim, so end HIV by 2030. That was the big sort of push from the government and Terence Higgins Trust. Yeah, hopefully we can do it. I'm feeling optimistic, and I feel like particularly throughout the pandemic, it's been quite nice. A light has been shone again on HIV, I feel personally, yeah. You know, with programs like It's a Sin, there's been so much advocacy. Obviously, I'm a bit biased because it's kind of what I do on a day-to-day basis, and you get absorbed in that, particularly on Twitter and the people that you follow. But, you know, even having conversations with my parents about HIV or having conversations with people about HIV medicine and PrEP and what PrEP is, I think it's become much more frequent in the last couple of years. So hopefully this is just a new growing trend of improving education and awareness.
Great news. So thank you for being
here. It is great news.
Yeah, let's remain optimistic.
I'm super optimistic. I'm very excited. It's all very exciting. But yeah, we definitely recommend people check it out, have a look, start having conversations. Yeah, and hopefully you'll see some more news in the next couple of months.
And then we can have you back.
Woo! Yeah, for sure.
Every episode, welcome back, Joshua Wells. And today we're joined by Joshua Wells.
I think next people get episode sick of me there really quick.
Every time we have a science question, we'll just ask you to send us an audio clip.
That's
of
fine.
The facts.
More than happy to do that. More than happy to do that.
So I think that is all for today. That went really quickly.
Well, that's a great roundup of news articles. Spencer, you brought us...
I brought us a queer positive sex shop for people with cancer.
And I brought us the fact that Tokyo is recognising same-sex partnerships. And our guest, a lovely, lovely guest, Josh, has brought us a lovely news story about...
The FDA approving the first injectable treatment for HIV pre-exposure prevention, or PrEP.
Lots of big words. But all good stories and good news.
Very good.
And where can we find you online if anyone wants to stalk you?
I mean, you can find me on Insta. Nothing much is happening there, I'm afraid, Hans. JSWells_. But actually, probably the place to follow me would be my Twitter. It's where I talk about queer stuff. Also, some of the work we do at Lavender, which is super, super exciting. And you can find me on @JWells_. _ was taken, so I had to go for 3 underscores.
And do not forget to let us know that you have listened to our show on socials. We are on Instagram @queer_talk, and on Twitter we are queer talk_. Until next time,
bye.